Welcome back to KSCJ Radio, 1360 AM, 94.9 FM in Sioux City, Iowa. I'm Brian Vikalskis, and this is Having Read That, conversations with authors about their books.
My guest is the journalist and sports writer Steve Rushen, who's the person responsible for me over the years being trained to flip to the last page of Sports Illustrated when it comes in the mail in order to look for his columns. And 2 years ago, Steve released his memoir, Stingray Afternoons, where he reflected on growing up in the 1970s in Bloomington, Minnesota. Now he's back with the follow-up, Nights in White Castle, which moves the narrative of his youth into the 1980s. Steve, Nights in White Castle, we don't have White Castle here in Iowa. What are they?
That's a good question. I've been eating for years and asking the same thing. They're very small, square hamburgers with five holes in them, steamed. The White Castle restaurants are a great venue for people watching. So when I was in high school, we would go there late nights, most nights of cruising the 494 strip in the Twin Cities, ended at White Castle. You could eat at least 10, sometimes as many as 20 hamburgers in a single sitting, for 26 cents a hamburger at the time. So it was a great place to sit, have the time go by, and kind of talk about what you were going to do when you finally got out of Bloomington. And something that I did and spent the rest of my life, I'm 52 now, wondering how I can get back there.
And, you know, you wrote this book in the present tense as if we're watching your adolescence in real time unfold on the pages. When a memoir, which by its very nature is something that covers something that happened in the past, why did you choose to use this literary technique?
Well, it's funny. Somebody asked me when I was in the Twin Cities a couple of days ago, you know, you wrote an entire book about Bloomington. And I corrected her and said, no, I've actually written two and counting. To me, it was wanting to, in part, re-experience my childhood. I think a lot of people, not only my age, but people who grew up in the 60s, people who may have grown up in the 80s or 90s, have a not so much nostalgia. I didn't want it to be a book that, you know, romanticizes that time. I just wanted to re-experience it in all the reality of childhood. And I think anybody, no matter where you grew up, has these similar experiences of long, boring summer days of when there's nothing to do, when you're forced to use your own imagination. You know, people talk a lot about how the world has changed for children, and in a lot of ways that's true. But I have four kids myself, and I see them do a lot of the same things that I did in the 70s and in the 80s. And I think these universal experiences, particularly for me, where I was a shy kid, I was afraid to talk to anybody. I think that's why I became a writer. It makes people feel, you know, oh, I did that too. I felt this way also. It makes people feel, I think, a little bit less alone, which is probably the greatest service that literature can offer. You know, as a writer, you spend most of your time alone in a room writing, and as a reader, it's a very solitary experience as well. And when you can connect the reader and the writer through these common experiences, I think that's a wonderful thing.
Well, you mentioned common experiences, obviously. We're close in age, about 8 years apart, but I laughed out loud at you going to a Catholic grade school, as did I, and blaming the CCD kids for stealing the stuff from the classroom, because it seemed like every time something would turn up missing in our classroom, we'd always blame the CCD kids.
Well, you know, my kids are 8 through 14. I have four. They all went to Catholic K through 8. Three of them still do, and that's one of those things where they come home and say, I need new glue sticks. I need new erasers. The CCD kids stole them. And I just have to laugh because 40 years ago, we were doing the same thing. Whether they did or not, I don't know. But I see them experience, you know, really obsessed with what shoes they have, because it's the only form of expression in Catholic school. You have to wear the pants, the shirt, the sweatshirt that they tell you to wear, but your gym shoes anyway can be any color and can be anything. So, and we go back to Minnesota every summer over the 4th of July. And a couple of summers ago, my son was in bed in my sister's cabin, and he was feeling all of his bug bites that he had accrued that day. And he said, Dad, yesterday I had 20 bug bites. Now today I have 27 bug bites. And he was kind of feeling these bug bites like he was rereading the day in Braille. And I remember doing that exact same thing myself growing up in Minnesota. So it's kind of a way of recording their childhoods while recording my own.
you know, as I read Stingray Afternoons a couple years ago and then Nights in White Castle now, I sensed two distinct personalities between the 70s and the 80s for you. And it seems like the 80s were probably the last decade that had a distinct personality for me. Did you get that same sense?
Well, yeah, I think it's partly, you know, the stage of life you're in. I like to think that, you know, the times we're living in now, as turbulent as they are, will still, I hope, feel like a golden age to my own kids. But absolutely, technology was changing in a way that we were never going to be able to go back to in the 70s. And up to my senior year of high school, we had 5 channels TV at home. In 1984, my senior year, I came home one day and we had now 30 channels of cable TV. My dad was in the magnetic tape business for 3M. He sold videotape and audio tape. So we had gotten the VCR. We no longer had to stay home to watch Magnum PI. We could record it. As my parents were trying to get me to leave home because I was a really inert kid, you know, TV and the sort of changing technology was sucking me back into the house and trying to get me to stay in. And, you know, and I think that was the beginning of this world that we live in now, where everybody is attached to a screen, a Netflix account, a social media account in some way. And so the 70s and into the mid 80s, I think, were kind of the last time when you were you were allowed to be bored, really.
Well, it seems like even though we've got gazillion channels now, we can watch whatever we want, those shared experiences that we all remember, watching the last episode of MASH, watching David Letterman as he first came on TV, you talk about those, and it seems like, you know, we could get all of that with a rabbit ear antenna, and so those are the memories that stick despite all the entertainment we have now.
Absolutely, and, you know, growing up in Bloomington, which I thought was the center of the universe because we had professional sports. We had the Twins and Vikings and North Stars playing in Bloomington. We had an international airport with flight attendants coming in from all over the world. We had this dinner theater called the Carlton Celebrity Room. So I could see Johnny Carson, 30 million viewers a night, my dad laughing through his monologue after the local news, and then me when I was old enough to watch. And Rodney Dangerfield, you know, from Caddyshack and Back to School, sitting on Johnny's couch saying, you know, I'll be appearing next week at the Carlton Celebrity Room in Bloomington, Minnesota. Johnny laughing at that, like, where is that? And Rodney laughing and say, yeah, my act is going to be reviewed in Field & Stream magazine. And to me, what a thrill. This guy that everybody in America watches is talking about the town that I live in, you know. And that certainly has gone away, those common things. But MASH, I dressed up as Hawkeye Pierce during the final episode, the day the final episode of MASH was, to go to high school. It wasn't crazy for a 17-year-old kid to go in a bathrobe and an empty martini glass to high school, because, you know, 140 million or whatever it is, we're going to be watching MASH that night. So those things are long gone, and I think in some ways we're poorer for it.
I'm chatting with Steve Rushen about his brand new memoir, Nights in White Castle. It's the follow-up to Stingray Afternoons. If you've never read either, go buy both of them, but especially Nights in White Castle, because it's just a fantastic book. Steve, there's been plenty of movies about kids in high school in the 80s. Remember Fast Times at Ridgemont High? Remember Marty McFly in the Back of the School, or the Back to the Future movies? How close did you observe your own high school time reflecting the 80s in high school that we'd see on the screen?
Well, I mean, there definitely were common threads, and I think, you know, those movies had, you know, alienated kids, and particularly the John Hughes movies always had somebody who was felt left out. But for the most part, I didn't recognize on the screen myself. You know, everybody was either a jock or a nerd, a bully, or getting bullied, and I was one of many kids, I think, in high school who were somewhere in between all that stuff. I played basketball and had friends, who were athletes, and I loved words and writing stories alone in my room and playing card and dice games, Strat-O-Matic baseball. And so I think I was, you know, very much a nerd as well. And I think that's probably true of many, many high school students. And, you know, those characters are sort of split apart in the movies. But it certainly was a golden age of you know, high school movies and that high school sort of age captivating movie theaters. And it really was one of the last ages of you know, movie theaters as well. We had the Southtown Theater in Bloomington, a huge 1,000-seat theater where that was, you know, you could have Hollywood premieres at. And I would sneak into Return of the Jedi there. You hide in the men's room until the show started, and then walk into the theater as if I'd had a ticket while playing, you know, Frogger in the lobby up until then. So, so for me, it was a golden age in so many ways. But you know, I'm not one of these people who say it was so much better then. I like to think my kids will have their own golden age now.
You know, one experience you had that I never did, because I was an oldest child, is never got to visit a brother or sister at college as an underage kid, but you did that with your brother at Iowa State in Ames. What kind of memories do you have from being able to visit this guy that you'd shared a room with and grown up with, that now he's away from home in his own place?
Well, he was having some incredible misadventures his freshman year at Iowa State. He was sort of all id. He, you know, he bought a motorcycle as soon as he got there, and he blew himself up while trying to dig a hole for his fraternity for a mock funeral. And he, so when I went to visit him, I stayed in the Coldwater dorm, which was a series of stacked bunk beds. I went down with a buddy of mine, and I think I was on like the third level of bunk beds. You had to be slid in there with like a pizza peel to get in there. And it was a party just raging throughout the house all night. And I could feel the vibrations of the music, and the building was throbbing. And I thought, man, is this what college is like? That may be why I ended up going to a Jesuit school and having at Marquette in Milwaukee and having not enough friends to have a circle of friends. I say I had a triangle of friends. It was my brother Tom, a year older than me. We had shared a room all growing up. And so the year he went to Ames, and I was a senior in high school, was the one year that I didn't share a room with somebody, and I had been so looking forward to that. And then when he left, I realized, you know, how lonely that was, and I missed having somebody just across the room in the identical twin bed. So, I had a very different college experience than Tom did at Iowa State.
You know, you talk about finding your humorous voice as a writer through all of this, and the one thing that I pulled out of this book, and it's something I've done too. You can write you can type your entire first name with your left hand, and you seem to become obsessed with that, of words that you could, they were left-handed only words. Where did that come from?
Well, I still do it as I'm talking to you now. I'm typing my name with my left hand on my thigh. I'm sitting on airplanes, I find myself typing. I tell aspiring writers, if you're going to take one class, you know, history, art, journalism, whatever, take typing. I did in high school, it saved me so many hours. But I don't know. I loved words growing up. From my earliest memories, I remember seeing the Twins in a headline in the newspaper, the Minnesota Twins, and seeing "win" concealed in the word "twins." I loved books of wordplay. I remember, you know, hearing that "go hang a salami, I'm a lasagna hog" was the same forwards as backwards. And, you know, as soon as I discovered that, I it blew my mind. And, you know, the word devastated, D-E-V-A-S-T-A-T-E-D, I'm typing it on my leg right now, it's an entirely left-handed word. I like playing with words. You know, I think when we're all babies, we play with little building blocks that have letters on them. And I think my life has just been a continuation of that, of arranging letters and making fun shapes out of the 26 letters of the alphabet.
All right, it's just been this memoir is just absolutely fun to read, and it just connected with so many things from my childhood. It's Nights in White Castle. It's the memoir of Steve Rushen, the follow-up to Stingray Afternoons, and as Steve hinted, there will be more to come as he remembers his time in Bloomington, Minnesota, growing up. Steve, just a fantastic memoir. I thoroughly enjoyed it, and thanks for joining us to talk about it.
Brian, thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it.
This has been Having Read That on KSCJ Radio in Sioux City, Iowa. I'm Brian Vakulskas. Check out all of our episodes on our website, kscj.com. Also, be sure to like Having Read That on Facebook and subscribe to our iTunes podcast. Thanks to segment producer John Weisler. We will be back next time.
Nights in white satin, never reaching the end.